You know what they say, even if you were just a tad late, as long as you can promise that it's going to be great and everything will be fine. Good morning to you in Lagos, Nigeria. I'm not sure where you are getting us from, what part of the world. We are 6 minutes behind schedule. Apologies for that. We'll make it up to you. Welcome to COVID-19 Heroes. We promised you on Monday we are going to return with a hero and a subject matter you would love. We are here to fulfill that promise. My name is Femi Obong Daniels, and I'm not alone as usual. COVID-19 Heroes is proudly co-presented by Femi and Wiba Boa, who joins me now. Hello, Wiba, how are you doing?
Yeah, Femi, good morning. How's everything on your end?
Well, interesting, man. There's plenty of running around to do. You know why, but well, yeah. We're cool. Yeah. Such is the time, isn't it?
All right. Okay, good. So listen, our guest was actually on 5 minutes ago. It seems she's not connected now.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how we now pass the time till she gets back on. Is your technician working to get her on?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly the team is working to get her on. We'll get back to her in a minute. Just before she joins us, just to give you context. So we're talking about where we said we've promoted it. If you followed it on social media, we're looking at collaboration to beat COVID-19. What's being done, especially in the private sector? What kind of private sector partnerships are on to ensure that this unfortunate pandemic is defeated? Those are the things we will be talking about. And amongst other things, we will be looking at a coalition of, yes, private sector partners. And we would see how that started. Why? How did it happen so fast under these situation? Now, we'd also be looking at how easy it is for multiple partners with multiple interests to come together and fight one cause. So these are some of the stuff we are looking at talking about. Wiba, you're the guy who follows this things even more than me, the journalist, because I was going through some conversations you had with some heavyweights in the energy power sector not too long ago, and I saw your follow-up tweet that it was an eye-opener for you. I think in that particular instance, you were looking at how people in that sector could harmonize and collaborate with people in what other sector was that? So collaboration is something big for you, and you've been following the trend. I wonder what you're getting.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, we've had crises in the past in Nigeria, and collaboration has always been attempted, but it often doesn't work. And you end up, you know, especially when there's big egos involved, somebody wants their name first, or someone else's name shouldn't be there, etc. And it breaks down. But I think I think we have her on now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
finally.
I'm here. And I'm so sorry. It's been a really crazy morning. I apologize to everybody. I was.
You are not alone. You are not alone. It's been crazy for me too. You know, I was just
Multitasking endlessly, and the multitask this morning was I had to get an ECG and abdominal scan.
Oh dear.
And I mean, I'm part of my annual checkup, but I didn't do it, and so this is the deadline is tomorrow to submit the results, and so. Anyway, apologies for this delay. Here I am now. Sorry.
We appreciate your coming.
When you're trying to save Nigeria, you get a pass. It's fine. but let's jump into the conversation. So talk to us about CACOVID. I mean, what Femi and I were just talking about is in the past there's been attempts to bring kind of, you know, all these sort of big names together under one umbrella to push a cause, and it doesn't usually work. But this time, you guys have made it work. How did you do that, and what was the genesis?
So how it all started, Wiba, is that us as Aliko Dangote Foundation had already been working on the COVID-19 response. So the day after we had the first index case, which was February 27th, we got a letter and a call from NCDC saying, listen, we have this incident action plan. We need to get to work immediately. And here's a costed response that was 1.6 billion naira. So we immediately jumped up and gave 200 million to that response. So the cost of 200 million, $101.6 billion request. Now, that request had gone to donors like ourselves, like us, BMGF, WHO, USAID, et cetera. So we really redeemed our 200 million naira pledge. We bought a few ambulances for Lagos State, paid for the surveillance system. So we did what we said we were going to do. And for us, it was a continuation of our involvement, even in the Ebola crisis, where we did the port of entry support, which is the cameras at the airport. So even now, when you go to the international airports in Nigeria, you'll see the cameras with the screens, and you'll see donated by the Dangote Foundation. We really gave those cameras since 2015. We've been managing them, et cetera, et cetera. So a few days after that, Adejumo was like, look, this 200 million is not gonna be enough. The crisis was growing. We were getting more and more cases. And so him and Herbert Way from Access Bank said, you know what, let's see how we put our heads together. Let's come up with something, and then let's bring the rest of the private sector in. So that's how CACOVID was born. I mean, Herbert even coined the name CACOVID. We, you know, did a logo, and, you know, Amechi got a company to design the logo. And then we really had meetings with different private sector people, Central Bank got involved, and then CACOVID really started growing from there. And so why I think it's been successful is that this is a fight where all of us have the same interest, right? We're all in Nigeria together. We're all, you know, quote unquote, stuck here. And we need to find a solution for ourselves. It's not a question of, well, this is something that's only affecting a few people that we don't really, you know, we'll just pay attention to it if it affects us. This COVID is affecting everybody. It's affecting people's businesses, livelihoods. All kinds of people are getting this disease. And so it just became really important that we all work together and do this. And so I think that's why it's been successful, because this is something that affects all of us in a really concrete way. It's not like a theoretical problem that's affecting a few people who might happen to care about health. This is our, you know, we're in this together. So I think that's part of why it's been successful.
All right, Zuera, first off, I'd like to introduce you properly.
Oh, sorry.
Zuera Yusufu. Yes.
Yes, thank you.
So Zuera is CEO Aliko Dangote Foundation, and which brings me, so you know what the triumvirate is like now. It's Femi here, Weba there, and Zuera also there. Now, let me ask you this. CACOVID, which is the coalition against COVID-19, correct, right? Now, what's the mission? What's the ambition? When will you say our job is done?
Okay, so that second part is very open-ended. When we got together, the goal was to do three things. One, it was to increase testing in Nigeria. I mean, when CACOVID started, we had less than 4,000 tests that had been performed in Nigeria. And we didn't have enough testing reagents, we didn't have enough labs that were accredited, we weren't testing enough people. So that was the first thing we wanted to tackle. The second thing we wanted to do was get isolation centers across the country. So, you know, that's been in fits and spurts, because we imagine and remember, and let's all recognize that we were learning this as we were doing it. Like the same way the US and France and everybody else was scrambling to find answers, we also, you know, were trying to find what was going to work for us here in Nigeria. So isolation centers, we started with six in the six geopolitical zones. We had to redesign some of them because it turns out, oops, intense or complicated to manage effectively as an isolation center. And then the third thing that we wanted to do was to provide palliatives. I mean, we knew that the crisis was going to affect all of us. We thought that the people whose livelihood was a daily, like people who were surviving daily, would need support. If you say we're locking down the city, we're locking down states, we're reducing interstate travel, what would happen to people who, you know, got food, like work every day and got food every day? What would happen to them? So palliatives was the third leg of our intervention. Of course, advocacy, communications, talking to NCDC and PTF, making sure that our interventions were relevant to what the fight was, because we're not doctors or, you know, lab specialists. So the three big, if you will, action points were: one, increased testing, which we've done; build isolation centers, which we've done; and provide palliatives, which we're in the process of doing. So right now, we're about 70% delivered across the country. Our goal is to deliver the food in the warehouses in all the states, and then we go ahead and distribute all the way down to the ward levels. Our ambition was to reach 5% of the bottom of the pyramid population in Nigeria, which is 10 million people. And we really, you know, that number comes out to 1.67 million households. And so imagine getting food for that many people across the country at the same time. It's been a huge challenge, but, you know, thank God we're making progress there. So by the end of this month, we expect to have delivered all the isolation centers and all the food, and testing will continue. So we've been able to sign an agreement with the UN, for instance, to bring in some cartridges from Roche and from Cepheid. We've partnered with labs to bring in PCR machines and testing supplies that we've been giving to NCDC. And those things are coming in on a regular basis into the country. But for me, to your question about what's next, that's what we're now thinking about. Because a lot of that, the emergency, let's do these things, we're pretty much you know, done with those. Now it's like, okay, how do we, you know, what should we be doing? Mm-hmm. How do we get our economy going again? How do we get, how do we advocate for treatment protocols that would help reduce the pressure on isolation centers across the country? How do we make sure that people can get back to work in a safe way so that we can all, you know, get on with life? Right now, everything kind of, you know, feels on hold. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, with my kids' school even, you know, come the fall. We don't know what's going to happen to, you know, people being laid off across organizations, et cetera. So we're engaged in that next level of, I'm going to call it, thinking piece about how do we really provide some kind of solution that will be lasting post-COVID, given that our members are all part of the Nigerian private sector. And we've also been, you know, thinking about how do we engage across the continent? Because again, we can't only be focused on Nigeria forever. We had to get Nigeria right. Because if we, you know, how do you help somebody else if you haven't sorted out your own issues, right? It's like the, you know, mask on the baby's face on the plane. You have to put your own first and make sure you can breathe before you try to save somebody else. So, you know, we're starting to engage more with the African Union and making sure that they have their own CDC there. How do we get more supplies across the continent, and how can we be effective? Also, given that a lot of our members have businesses outside of Nigeria, this is something that is relevant to us.
So, Zuwera, you've mentioned obviously Aliko Dangote, Herbert Wigwe. Who else and what other companies are involved in this? And then I think you've sort of, without saying it, you've kind of made this known, but you know, you talk about the feeding program. I imagine that to deliver on that, you're able to actually use the supply chains and distribution chains and networks of all of these big companies, which I imagine makes it even more powerful. So how is that happening? Yeah.
So I don't want to leave anybody's name out, but we definitely have all the major banks in Nigeria: so GT Bank, Zenith Bank, UBA, First Bank, We have the manufacturing companies like Tolerums, Bua, Flour Mills of Nigeria. We have companies like Mrs. Elekija's company. We have companies like MTN, Glow. So there's a big list, and our website has the list of every single person who's involved. But we really have been able to mobilize, you know, the bulk of Gen private sector. I think there's still more to do. Olam just joined us a few days ago. So the idea is, how do we all then work together? If somebody is, you know, Flour Mills or Bua or Dangote, we produce sugar, salt, you know, pasta, maize flour. How do we then start sending this food quickly and quicker than people who aren't in the network? So for instance, if an organization like Dangote is you know, part of the palliatives is sugar and salt, our factories will be okay with, you know, producing and getting paid afterwards, versus if you go into the market today and try to buy sugar from somebody who's like, no, I need 100% upfront pay. All the supply chains have been disrupted. The trying to implement social distancing and all these recommendations in factories has meant that we have less capacity to produce. Like, if you have to, if you have to be separated, or you have to, you know, have barriers between people so they don't, you know, potentially contaminate one another, it means that you have fewer people in the factory, you have fewer people working, which means you have less product coming out, you have fewer truck drivers, you know, driving across borders is complicated. So we're doing this at a time where the actual moving around and the logistics in Nigeria have been extra challenging. So I think it's a good thing that a lot of our members are also the companies that are supplying some of these products at cost. I would say, you know, he's really making money in this fight.
All right, Zuera, if you're able to change your video orientation a little bit, it's pretty much Lance. Oops.
Like this.
Now you're turned sideways. Okay.
Let's just leave it.
Tunde is fine. Let me ask you. I mean, CACOVID has been setting up isolation centers across the country. I was just wondering, what's the process for a state or a city to host a CACOVID facility? Like, how many of these facilities are you looking to set up? And what should people expect that this would do for their immediate communities?
Okay, so we have, the plan is to set up isolation centers in every single state across the country. Some of them are already done, they're up and running. Some of them are in the process of being commissioned, for instance. But what is really important for people to realize is we didn't go and like build a brand new isolation center in all of these states. What we learned from the quick, immediate tent setup and the limitations of setting up tents and how expensive and complicated trying to make a tent into an isolation center is that it's much better to use an existing permanent structure. In addition to the fact that, okay, well, once COVID is over, what do we do with the tent? The tent is gonna have to go, right? We have to dismantle the tent and then, you know, throw it away, or, you know, try to figure out a way to repurpose the tent. But tents are a very temporary, obviously, solution. So the better one is to use existing permanent sites. So the states have given us either a wing of a hospital, an existing center that they were trying to turn into an isolation center, a space that needed to be renovated. In Katsina, for instance, they gave us their flood committee, IDP center. So we've done different things in different states, but the state basically says, look, come and help me set up an isolation center here. And what Kakovid did was bring the beds, the medical equipment, the ventilators, respirators, oxygen tanks, thermometers, bedpans, sheets, like all of that, the PPEs, and also provide some training for the health workers in the state, in partnership, of course, with NCDC. So the isolation center, for instance, in, I mean, let me pick the example of Kano, which is one that we've been, you know, working on, is immediately the crisis started, we quickly rushed and sent two tents, set them up in Sani Abacha Stadium and said, boom, let's do it. We sent the beds, we started sending the equipment. And then NCDC was like, wait a minute, infection prevention and control is not gonna work in this context. You need to redesign the tent, you need to put in paneling, we need to have negative air pressure in there, we need to have a ceiling, we need to make sure that we're not infecting people inside the isolation center. So we had to put the center on pause, make sure we got the extra infrastructure that we actually needed, because it turns out the tent is only the ward. All the tent is where the beds will be, where the patients will sit. The rest of the real work is the infrastructure around, which is containerized bathrooms, showers, food prep, pharmacy, lab, all these buildings, which we can't build because we're talking about a temporary solution, are containers that need to then be carried and modified and painted and adjusted. And so, for instance, with the Kano one, that's exactly what happened. Yep, it's true. April, I think, 5th, we had the tents up. But setting up a tent takes a day or two. Buying beds and setting up beds takes a day or two. But everything else that I just described takes weeks, right? And so here we find our containers in Kano. It'll take us another week to 10 days to make sure that all these things are outfitted. And then that'll be ready as an isolation center. But in the meantime, we've set up actual isolation centers in physical buildings that were already there. For instance, in Kenwood, there was a urology center that was kind of abandoned. They said, let's turn this into an isolation center. In 2 weeks, we did it, commissioned it. That one is up and running and receiving patients as we speak. So the isolation centers, the idea is to have one in every single state. And we have a schedule of commissioning now. By the end of this month, all 37 of them will be handed over and given to the states to now use.
Wow, that's impressive. And I mean, the way you're talking about it, you sound like an expert on this now. I mean, it's something that you just learned on the go. But what happens after? I mean, we're all looking towards the end of the pandemic. I think Femi sort of referred to this. But okay, the tents, as you said, aren't permanent. But I think the equipment and all that, I imagine that will stay and will become part of Nigeria's better healthcare infrastructure for the future.
Absolutely, Wuba. And that's why even as the last tent that we're doing is the one in Kano, right? After that, we're not doing any more tents. Everything that was in the tent will end up in a physical hospital as part of now, you know, new stuff that we have for our hospitals in Nigeria. So all that equipment will be repurposed and redistributed back into the healthcare system across the country. This is an opportunity, really, for Nigeria to really focus on improving our healthcare system.
Yeah.
You know, like I said in the